Welcome to KPTZ's Nature Now, a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of kptz.org.
Hello, and welcome to Nature Now for this third week in March. How did we get here already? I'm Mary Robson, here to talk about baby birds in the spring, generally, with Christy Lassen of Wild Birds Unlimited in Gardner. First, let's hear the mystery sound. We'll repeat this at the end of the program, but many of you may find this one easy to identify. For our observations for the week, it's very difficult to avoid noticing that the Olympic Mountains don't look the way they usually look. Drought conditions developing in the Olympic Mountains and other Washington areas caused Governor Jay Inslee to announce a drought declaration last week. Ample rainfall now makes it difficult to imagine dry summer troubles. We had a great deal of rain just yesterday, but the absence of winter snowpack causes the prediction. Snowpack in the Olympic Mountains stands about 8% of average for this time of year. Driving up to Hurricane Ridge sets the image of low snowpack. Some of yesterday's rain appears to have stuck as snow up at Hurricane Ridge, but until quite recently, it's been bare mud with very little snow, even on the highest areas. The drought declaration by the governor allows farmers, emergency planners, and water managers to plan responses as the summer dry season arrives. Low river levels late in the season can affect the salmon return when they encounter poor swimming conditions, and forests will also be more vulnerable to wildfires.
Gulls at Indian Island Park this week showed off their clam opening skills. They were probably western or galeacious winged. They scoop small clams up at low tide and fly nearly straight up and then drop them on the rocks. At first glance, it looks as if one has just lost the food opportunity by losing hold of the clam. But then they swoop down and pick their clam lunch out of the shattered shells. The gulls were joined by crows, who stayed on the beach and dashed over to snatch the clams before the gulls land. Sometimes they won, while other crows improved their odds by also dropping shellfish.
And you mentioned that you had seen crows dropping clams into the ferry line?
I was told this. I haven't actually seen it myself, but that the crows at either the Bainbridge Ferry or the Kingston Ferry are now taking clams and they'll place them under the tires of cars. So they won't even drop them. They'll walk up and put it in front of the tire of the car. And then as the cars drive off to get on the ferries, the crows wait for them to leave. And then they just come and pick out the clam meat out of the shells that the cars have run over. And they're adapting. They're learning. They're very smart birds.
And gulls, people, I think, need reminded that there is no such bird as a seagull, that they're called gulls, and they can drink salt water?
Gulls can drink salty water, seawater. They release the salt from glands in their heads. Other seabirds, crocodiles, sharks, and sea turtles also share this ability. Something to consider when you're feeding birds, too, that jays love peanuts, but don't feed them salted peanuts. It is not good for their systems. So unsalted foods for the birds, songbirds.
Because they wouldn't be able to get the salt, the extra salt out of their system if it was on a peanut when you handed it to them.
Processing it in their bodies is a problem. They don't have the capacity to process that salt in their bodies.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And definitely not good for them.
Okay. This is the last Monday of winter, which Christy reminded me of. It feels as if we were are still waiting for winter to arrive. But the vernal equinox comes to us at 9:57 a.m. Thursday, March 20th. These last months have found many of us saying, spring seems to be here already, and a lot of our plants look as if it is. But it is now official on the calendar. This week, spring starts. On the day of equinox, equal amounts of night darkness and daylight occur, thus the name equinox. Plants and animals respond to the increased light that occurs steadily until the June solstice. And I would have to add that I think humans in this environment respond to increased light at night and find ourselves wandering around our gardens at 10 o'clock at night, happily watching the birds. And speaking of birds, we have Christy Lassen here to share her experience in observing and teaching about them. She and her husband Mark own and manage the Wild Birds Unlimited store in Gardner. In addition to looking up, over, and around for birds, they also share a passion for wetsuits, for the ocean, and the waves. They are avid surfers on this peninsula, folks. And Christy says, remind everyone that she wishes they could go more often than they do. We are celebrating the behavior of birds in spring, largely includes making baby birds, so you're going to hear a lot about that. Many of the spring birds have arrived weeks early, and one of the ones that's somewhat early is the Rufous hummingbird, joining Anna's hummingbird, which is already nesting, I think, in some places. So, Christy, have you had some information about when the Rufous got back and where it came from?
We have received quite a few calls about Rufous hummingbird sightings for about the last 2 weeks. So they are a little bit early this year. We're definitely seeing them at our feeders. For the last 2 days, we've had them at the store on our feeders, which is exciting. The Annas have stuck around all year. We seem to get a bigger and bigger population every year of Anna's hummingbirds, and they have already started nesting. The Dungeness River Center has nesting Annas on the property every January. Those birds start nesting in January.
So they start that early.
They do.
That is a complete surprise to me.
And Wow. You were saying that you have a friend who sent you a recent picture of mm-hmm. Anna's recently hatched babies of mm-hmm. Anna's. And that is probably her second brood of babies. So they're on their second round of babies already.
That is incredible.
Which is pretty amazing. Yes.
Yeah, because in general, if we had what I guess put quotes around normal, if we had a normal winter, would the Anna's at that point when the temperature might be below freezing, would they also be nesting in January?
Yes. That's their natural instinct to start then.
That's one heck of a bird.
Very, very much. I think they're amazing little creatures.
They are amazing little creatures. Carrying on from hummingbird world, we just touched on the idea that this really has been an unusually high temperature winter season. And I would say temperatures in the 40s and 50s, much earlier than we usually have them. How has this affected some of the birds? Do you have thoughts about that?
I think that it's not so much the temperatures that really affect them. Definitely food sources affect their ability to nest a little earlier, and the plants are responding to that. So there are some food sources available that normally aren't this time of year. It seems to be pretty much on track, though, for like the chickadees. They're just now starting to nose around in cavities and check out living spaces.
Where to move. They're having chickadee real estate time.
They're checking out the listings.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty normal. I think that a lot of their nesting behavior not only depends on temperature, but the daylight hours, moon sets, and things like that. The birds are all affected by the rotation of the earth and the amount of daylight that we have and things like that as
well. So when we actually have accomplished the vernal equinox in the spring, we then have an increasing daylight coming along. That affects the birds as it does the humans,
definitely,
too. Okay.
Yes.
I'm fascinated by bird nests, and I thought one question that has really stuck with me is which birds reuse their nests? I know that eagles do. I have seen some really giant eagle nests. But what other birds come back to a nest or reuse a nest that one of their friends made?
A lot of birds are very sort of territorial and will return to the same spots where they nested before. Robins are a very common bird that will come and reuse nesting spots and old nests. Hummingbirds will too. Our Rufous hummingbirds are incredibly territorial, and they like to come back to the exact same feeders. They like to use the same spots to nest in. And hummingbirds will actually build their new nests on top of an old nest and use it sort of as a little platform for them to nest on.
Well, it is so difficult, I would think, to build a hummingbird nest that you'd want all the help you could get. But as the babies get into a hummingbird nest, the babies are small, like it's like the size of a raisin or something when they're just starting out. As they grow, what happens to the nest?
Well, hummingbirds use a lot of different things to make their nests out of. They use spider webs, they use lichen and moss. And the spider webs are really interesting in the use of the building of the nest because they stretch. As the babies grow, the nest stretches with the nestling so that they don't get squished in there. So there's room for them.
That is incredible.
Very fun.
And other birds that use their nests again, any thoughts about that one?
The house finches will return pretty regularly to the same nesting spots. And something interesting about house finches is that they generally don't use a house. They are not really cavity nesters. So their name, house finch, isn't really related to them living in a house. They like to nest in bushes and shrubs and trees, kind of dense foliage. But they will come and reuse the same nests. Eagles, definitely. The eagle nests are pretty conspicuous in the trees and quite fun to look at. And
they're so big.
And lots of eagles this year. It seems like we're seeing lots of activity.
In interesting places where I haven't seen them before, I'm seeing eagles.
Spreading out their nesting territory, which is pretty amazing.
That is such a wonderful story in terms of their return from nearly being extinct.
Very much so.
It's really marvelous. I was trying to think if there were any other birds that also reuse nests, and I think I've run to the end of what I know about that at that point, but there are other birds that might use a nest something else made, possibly. I don't know.
Definitely. Woodpeckers will excavate old dead tree stumps and snags to build a cavity to nest in, and a lot of those cavities each season get taken over by other birds. Chickadees will go in them, nuthatches, squirrels sometimes will get in there and nest in cavities. So woodpecker houses get used by a lot of different types of birds. Snags in general are fantastic habitat for lots of critters.
I really am having a vision of the bird real estate world in the spring, that before you can actually produce these babies, very much like humans, you're saying, we are expecting a child. We need a house. And
yes.
So they do that. There are bird nests high and low, and I know some birds nest on the ground. I have seen the killdeer nests at Far Reaches Nursery here in Port Townsend. They have signs up all over the place so people will recognize that the killdeer are running around. I know a lot of seabirds and Arctic birds tend to nest on the ground and much harder to see than you think they would be.
They're very well camouflaged. Here, some of our songbirds will nest on the ground. There's a couple of sparrow species that will
nest on the
ground. So
would they be under a bush where they're hiding?
Sometimes just right in the grass, in the tall grass. Sometimes they'll just right on the tall grass. Sometimes low down in ferns, at the base of ferns, at the base of lavender plants. Sometimes they'll nest right there. We generally get calls from customers every now and then of people mowing down their fields and finding a nest with eggs. And what do we do? And we say, just leave it. Keep your dogs and your cats away. I think one of the most interesting ground nesters that we have here are the northern harrier hawks.
I think
amazing.
Of hawks as being way up in trees, but they are actually on the ground.
Yep, they are field hunters, so they like to cruise through the fields to find food, and they are ground nesting birds, which is really interesting.
It is, because most of the hawks I've ever observed have been in flight. I hadn't really considered that they might be coming home to settle down on the mud or on the ground somewhere.
Yeah.
So, and that's because their prey, their little mice,
food source,
voles, is closer to them.
I'm not 100% sure why they nest on the ground, because a lot of hawks and the raptors eat those sort of species as well. They've just adapted to have the ground be their habitat to nest in, and maybe they don't have to compete then with the other hawks for nesting space.
We also have mud dauber nests that are very prominent this time of year, and after the rain we have lots and lots of mud. Swallows are known for tucking themselves along the edges of buildings. Robins, I have forgotten what they make their nest out of, mostly grass.
And mud, too. They use mud to strengthen the nest. So it's sort of like the plaster to hold all the sticks and twigs together.
I was reminded of my son's birthday party because we had a lot of blue streamers, which were about quarter of an inch wide that we were throwing around the yard. And some of these blue streamers wound up woven into a robin's nest.
Definitely.
Which was wonderful. I did not, by the way, collect that nest. We're fascinated by birds' nests, but how are we supposed to relate to them legally? I mean, I left that robin in the tree, but it's tempting to say, oh, this nest is so perfectly beautiful. I want to take it home.
The Migratory Bird Treaty Act makes it illegal for anyone to disturb a nest of any native bird species without a permit. It also is illegal for us to collect or have in our possessions live native birds, young ones or adult ones, bird feathers, nests, or eggs, for us to try to incubate wild bird eggs, or for us to keep nests or eggs, even for like a show and tell sort of purpose. You're not allowed to have these things in your possession unless you hold a special permit, unless you are a licensed bird rehabilitator.
Okay, so I was going to ask what sorts of people would be likely to get permits, and it would be people who are
doing the licensed rehab of wild bird species. So the Northwest Raptor Center and Discovery Bay Wild Bird Rescue here in Port Townsend
would have such permits.
Definitely.
Right? I have a feeling that many of our listeners are going to be gazing at the bird's nests in their home saying, but I found this on the ground. Can't I keep it? It doesn't seem as if the enforcement is really strong, especially if you've seen a nest fall or found it on the ground. But they are part of the ecology of the world that they're in.
Definitely.
I mean, I think we don't just go around randomly picking things up and bringing them home.
And I think like those rules are more in place so that people don't disrupt active nests, you know.
Oh, okay.
I think that that's why they say you should not have these things. There's definite legalities for bird feathers and things like that that aren't implicated in what I'm trying to say here. But
okay.
But nest and things like that, if someone's saying, oh, that's a beautiful nest, I'll take it. Well, maybe that bird is going to reuse that nest, and now that bird has to expend the energy and resources that it has to create another nest, which he could have reused the same one.
Right.
So
and
something like that. I think
it might interfere then with the normal spring mating and creation of
definitely
new families.
Birds expend tremendous amounts of energy during this time of year, mating, establishing territories, fighting for mates and keeping those mates, and then building the houses and laying the eggs and keeping them warm and feeding the mate. And it's
so
a lot of work. And
it must be difficult, not this particular winter, but in a winter where there's been really cold weather and they don't come into spring in quite as good shape as they would on some more mild winters.
Definitely. Available food sources greatly impact a bird's ability to nest. We had a couple of winters ago, pretty cold winters, and then really cold springs where the bug population was really down.
Ah.
And we generally always have nesting tree swallows and violet green swallows on our property. And they came and checked out the nest boxes and nobody nested. And I think it's because they knew that they couldn't feed those babies. They have to have an active, readily available source of bugs to eat in order to ensure that they can raise babies.
I've been seeing gnats for weeks and weeks.
Yeah.
And every time I see a cloud of gnats, I think, oh, lunch, dinner, bird food.
Both tree swallows and violet greens are back. March 8th, I think we got our first report, and then March 13th of tree swallows.
There are a lot of lyric poems about how people feel when they see the swallows swooping, not just coming back to Capistrano, but just swooping in the evening. There's a kind of magical lyricism about the way swallows fly that's it's just wonderful to look with. Well, so we have all this energy and activity. Which male birds actually help with nestlings? I know the male hummingbirds take off once they've and they have that interesting mating flight where some of them will go up 50 feet and drop.
Definitely. The Annas fly in very specific patterns to attract their mates. They do an almost like a choreographed dance where they do a couple of loops and then zip up as high as they can go and then come zinging back down.
They drop really fast,
Yep. And then there's a little J maneuver that they do at the bottom of the of the flight and come up and spread their tail feathers and wings and do a little squawk.
Boy, look at me. Am I ever strong?
Definitely.
Right. It's quite surprising when you see it, because until you realize it's part of a mating show, you're thinking, why is that hummingbird 40 feet in the air dropping like a rock. It's because it wants to be seen. Some male birds will help with the nestlings.
Definitely. Chickadees are great parents. They do cooperative nesting and help feed each other and feed the babies.
You mean like a babysitting cooperative?
Definitely. Well, not just with their own family.
Okay.
Yes, just generally with their own family. But there are birds where the siblings will actually help in the raising of the new babies. Western bluebirds have been seen doing this. The first year fledglings will come back to the nest with the parents and help raise the new babies. And sometimes if that fledgling does have a nest of its own, he'll even split his time between his family and his parents' family, his parents' new family.
That is
feed those babies
quite astonishing.
Too.
I mean, it sounds like a British novel where they just couldn't stay away from home, so they come and help. That can't be too common with birds, though. I mean, I'm wondering what it does for the first-year birds that are coming back as siblings. Are they still learning from the parents? Maybe that's it.
I think so, and maybe just not ready to take that step to have their own nest. They need another.
I'm done with college, and I'll be moving back in now.
I'm going to take 1 year off.
Right. Yes. Right. Just other male birds that might be helpful?
Well, wrens are interesting. Generally, they will build multiple nests. They'll find a couple of nest boxes or cavities and fill them with nests. They find their mate, and then they take that mate and show her all of the nest spots and she's then allowed to pick her favorite. If she deems them worthy, she'll stay in one of the nests and move in. And that wren male will help her a little bit. But then he goes off and finds another female to see if he can move her into one of the other nests that he's worked so hard to build.
So he builds a nest, mates, right? Mm-hmm. Leaves the potential mom there and goes out to the equivalent of a wet bar looking for another. How many times can they get away with this in a year?
I'm not sure of the exact number, but generally the wrens build 3 or 4 houses. They'll build 3 or 4 nests in cavities. What I've read, too, is that he's pretty helpful with both of them. I think it's mainly just 2 that they do, but there may be more. Nothing is for sure in nature.
No, that is for certain. And I'm really astonished that the wrens are investing in multiple families. It's obviously the survival of the species by getting as many of them as they possibly can to reproduce in one summer, especially if the conditions are good.
Definitely.
I wonder who teaches them to sing.
Most of it, I think, is natural for them.
The singing.
It's an instinct.
They will sing.
Yep. But they definitely learn nuances and things like that. There's regional variations in bird songs, which is pretty interesting. They have accents.
It seems to me that we could be going on like this until spring is over, but I wanted to check with you about a question people might have if they found a fallen baby bird.
When you find a baby bird on the ground, one of the very first things you want to do is look up. Look up and see what's around that baby bird. If there's a tree nearby that it could have fallen out of, if there's a nest somewhere, around it, look down on the ground, see if it's there's a nest that belongs to that baby bird. Another thing too to think about, if it's hurt or sick, if you see it bleeding, or if its wings are drooping unevenly, or if it's weak and shivering, you may want to see if you can get it to a wildlife rehabber. Okay. We have very fantastic wildlife rehabilitators out here on the peninsula. You can always call the Wild Birds Unlimited store in Gardner, and we're the relay for life is what we call it.
Okay.
We will shuttle the birds to the right rehabbers.
If the bird is okay but just kind of not in its nest, you can create a little safe nest for it.
Definitely. If it's a nestling and it doesn't have any feathers on it, you can pick that bird up and put it back in the nest. Birds don't have a sense of smell, and so parents won't reject a baby bird if you have handled it. The reason why you don't want to handle baby birds is that it stresses them out tremendously.
Uh-huh.
And so you want to handle them as little as possible, but if you can get up there and put that baby bird back right side up, tucked kind of snugly in the nest, the the parents will not reject it at all. If you can't reach the nest, you can create a little nest out of like a strawberry basket, a little margarine tub, punch some holes in the bottom of it so that it doesn't hold water, put some soft grasses in there, something that won't catch the bird's nails, and put it up as high as you can get it in the same tree where the nest is, and the parents will come down and feed the baby bird as well.
They'll see the bird and they really aren't going to say, oh, darn, it's not in our nest. We're not going to take care of
it. They won't abandon it.
Wow.
They'll hear it calling. They'll see it. They'll come and feed it.
I have had a most enticing and interesting afternoon about this, and we always look forward to learning more about birds, and we certainly have done that today. So our mystery sound. Is a killdeer, which is named for its call. It is Charyadrius vociferus. It is a very loud bird. Killdeer are in the plover family, and most plovers are usually shorebirds, but these have settled on living in open ground, such as lawns, road edges, parking lots. They vocalize night and day, and in port towns, and they've taken up nesting spots on the sides of the drive into Far Reaches Farm, which results in yearly warning signs for drivers. One surprising feature of killdeer is that they stay within the egg longer than many other birds. They emerge from the egg with their eyes open, and they're able to run as soon as their feathers are dry. This is called being precocial, like chickens who also hatch bouncing around. Many of us think of baby birds as just kind of looking like larvae, but the precocial ones, who may have been in the egg for a whole month, really can move when they're new. The precocial birds need care until they fly, but their early condition is much different from robins, hawks, and hummingbirds, who are blind and helpless when their eggs crack. And a couple of events. One of them is on birds.
Bird call. Learn to identify birds by their sound. Olympic Peninsula Audubon starts a class that runs March 19th through June 25th. Check with them for details. This is the perfect class for nearsighted people who miss the sightings. It's also a good chance to appreciate the sounds of spring when many birds are most vocal.
And one other note, on Thursday, March 19th, there will be a talk at the Port Townsend Community Center at 7 p.m. by Sue Thomas, and this is about unmanned aircraft systems and how they might affect wildlife refuges. Sue Thomas is a wildlife biologist with 18 years of experience. She counts seabird colonies and monitors birds on Protection Island and on the San Juans. And the question is, unmanned aircraft systems or drones are increasing, but what are the consequences to wildlife? She'll report on a pilotless project on closed refuge islands along the outer coast of Washington. And what they're trying to do is discover what the level of disturbance is to seabirds and marine animals. And that is it for this show. A lot of wonderful information about birds. Thank you, Christy.
Thank you, Mary.
If you'd like to hear this show again, Nature Now repeats at 5 o'clock on Thursdays and 11:30 on Saturdays. Listen next week to hear Deborah on Kelso, and recent podcasts are available at kptz.org.
Nature Now is produced by Kate Dwyer and edited by Charlie Fleischman. Production coordinator is Mike Schlexer.
Today's closing music is Spring, performed by Tracy Chapman.
There's a cloud, a blue sky darkening that veils the light of the sun and foretells the rain. There's a bird, there are birds, and some are singing to greet every new day that may come like the first of spring. It is cold, I've had the feeling at the heart and in the core, the root of all things. But there's a bird, there's a bulb, it will be blue.
every new.